Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. My name is Diana Damian and I'm here with Lucy, Joshua and Toby to discuss spoken word and performance in celebration of Roundhouse's The Last Word Festival. So The Last Word is one of London's first spoken word festivals and it features live performance and storytelling at the intersection between music, theatre and poetry from both emerging and established artists. I'm just going to introduce my guest for today. Lucy is festival producer for the Last Word Festival, and she works at the Roundhouse. Joshua is a poet and founder of poetry group A Poem Between People. He runs poetry and music nights in London, and for the Last Word Festival, he is curating a Poe-Jazzy Howl 2.0, which is a reimagining of the Ginsberg poem that inspired a new generation of poets. Toby is a writer and performer who's taking part in A Cloud of Foxes Run, a collaboratively devised story directed by Yael Shavit, with a score by Daniel Marcus Clark and movement by, direction by Lucy Beristow. The story presents a journey through one night which draws on 11 distinct voices. Welcome, everyone. And thank you for joining. So, to get us started, I thought it'd be great to hear just how each of you individually became interested in spoken word and what it kind of means for you and what your journey has been so far.
Okay, I'll start. I never wanted to be a poet. I wanted to be a scriptwriter, but university has a weird way of introducing modules. These things called modules where you have to do poetry because it's all part of creative, so I had to do poetry. And a lot of the teachers kind of opened my eyes to what poetry was. In fact, the first real poem I wrote was a rip-off of Allen Ginsberg's Howl. It was only 6 minutes long, so thankfully the audience was spared, but it literally just stole his stanzas and his style. And through that, I started poeming to people. I met Musa Okwonga and Inua Ellems and Shabaka Hutchins and Ed Sheeran and Raymond Antrobus. And somewhere in between that, I started working at the burlesque bar in the basement. The lady there was really, really wonderful. She said, you're doing spoken word. I run a burlesque bar with Cabri and all this funny stuff happens. Why don't you run a night? And we thought, yeah, we'll run a night. Let's call it something. What's on your night? It's called Poetry and Jazz. So call it Poe-Jazzy. And then it just went off from there. Poetry was a very, very welcoming scene for me and what I wanted to say. And Poe-Jazzy, a lot of people liked kind of music we brought and the spoken word we brought. This year we had Charlotte Wolkena, who can't be here. She came on board and she wanted to create concept shows, shows that were very unique and where also gave back and gave opportunities to a lot of young poets. And how? Allen Ginsberg Howl, it came back to us and we thought, oh, let's have young people rewrite it, see how they can view it. And yeah, it's been wonderful working with these five poets, Diana, Kareem, Rosie, Jack, Rook, and James Messiah, and it's going to blow everyone away. It's the most amazing thing that's ever been said to an audience full of people using rhyme as a mean of saying what they want to say. That's what I've said.
Excellent. Thanks, Joshua. Toby, do you want to match that?
I guess I grew up as like a kid in the 90s, so I was kind of really into sort of what was happening musically around that time, and it felt like was really inspired by sort of hip-hop and grunge and folk, and what became clear as I got older was it was basically storytelling, and was really interested and got really into reading and loved films, just loved stories, and was kind of like, is there something that fuses this all together? And then I saw, on like a real off chance, I walked past this place and saw an advert for a thing called Return by Polar Bear, which was an hour-long spoken filmic story, really, and I saw it, and it was kind of like one of those moments where that's what I want to do, and that's, started doing it.
And for me,
from your perspective,
it's my job, but it's something that through my job I've kind of learned so much about and learned to kind of really respect and love, and so kind of putting this festival together was just, it was a joy and a real honour to do, and the kind of spoken word programme is a really sort of strong kind of through art form at the Roundhouse, and it's something that kind of at the Roundhouse does a lot of work with 11 to 25 year olds in kind of creative industry, creative projects, and actually spoken word is one of those areas where it's sort of really excelled, and it's such an amazing way for young people to kind of communicate and sort of. So for the past 4 years, we've been kind of working a lot with kind of young emerging artists, and then working a lot with established artists. And we sort of spent a couple of years of kind of inviting Po Jazzy and Tung Fu and Bang Said the Gun and other kind of great poetry collectives to kind of come in and experiment and use our small hub space, use our studio theatre space. And that kind of led on to us starting to commission works. We commissioned Polar Bear to create his show Old Me, and it sort of just all spiraled, really. Mm-hmm. And we just felt as an organisation it was the time to kind of, considering what a kind of really popular art form spoken word is now in the UK and in London, we thought it was crazy it didn't have a festival kind of like sort of really figureheading it as an art form. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, we'll be the ones to do it then. So kind of that's how it kind of came about, and it's been a really fantastic process, and it's really exciting. We're kind of in it now. This is
it's happening,
so it's really great.
So on that note, I thought it would be interesting for you to talk a little bit about your projects and what you're doing as part of the Last Word Festival with a bit more detail, and what that process has been for you.
Oh, okay. So I'm a member of A Cloud of Foxes, and the idea was to see if it was possible for 11 writers to tell a story together. And I think it proved that it is possible. And the process, it was a nuts process, but it was really exciting. And we came together. It felt, it's sort of like a segment of a night in a city where change happens. And it kind of goes, what was lovely and beautiful to play with was the fact that what spoken word allows you to do is go from one moment to the next. You could go anywhere because it's just voices and images being created by your mouths. And we started playing lots with seeing how we could take it different ways. And we kind of, through that, we kind of created our own city with these different characters that were made up of these different voices. And what was, and that's kind of it. And what's been really lovely, really exciting about it is that we set out to want to make a piece that felt like an ensemble. Because I've been part of collectives and have done stuff with collectives, and it almost felt like what we were seeing was you'd have a group of like five writers, but they'd get up and do 3 minute bits each, and we were like, we really wanted to break that mold because it doesn't seem like anyone else is doing that. We wanted to create this piece where it was clear that people were listening to each other and writers were interacting, and I feel we've done that, and that's, yeah.
So what's it like for you as a writer to co-author but also maintain your own?
I've really loved it. I think it's been really fun because you get to play with other people's voices, and you get to, there's things that you get the opportunity to write things that would sound weird coming out of your voice, but you've got someone in the room who would do it perfectly, or you've got an idea.
So were you writing kind of for each other?
Yeah, well, the whole thing was a collaborative process, and that was what was amazing about it. And it was amazing. It became very clear very early on. To me, it felt like you had a family and you were working this together. And it was brilliant because, like, if you had an idea that you felt really strongly about, but you were like, I don't know someone would always be like, yo, we'll take it there, and you'd just be like, it was very exciting, and it was sort of, yeah, it was.
So there wasn't even a question of this is my authored section and this is yours. It was
no, everyone, it felt like you were working with a group of people that really cared about this piece. And a group of people who really cared about what they were trying to say and what they wanted to do with the form. So it feels like we're always working towards the same thing. Yeah. So it was kind of like there was so much passion. It was kind of just exciting. It never felt like, I don't know. I think we just clicked. Yeah. I think it, I mean, from Yale said it really well. She, like, we were doing some movement exercises, and it was like watching 11 people who were so used to always getting picked last for sports at school had suddenly been kind of picked and put together. And I think that's why it works, because everyone is, we're one, we're not. Yeah, that's what I think is really beautiful about, been really beautiful about the process and about the piece.
Thank you. Joshua, how about?
Okay. It kind of started around March. We had just finished hosting our first night over at in a place in King's Cross. I got a text from Inua Ellums, a friend of ours who's like a silent partner of Poe Jazzy, and he said, how about this for an idea? Grime artists reenacting Howl. Now, I thought that was the best idea ever since sliced bread. But then I started thinking about it some more when I thought, well, grime artists will only write unless, you know, they are unknown. If you really wanted to make it work, you wanted, like, known grime artists. You wanted, you know, not Wiley, but at least kind of like a level below Skepta. And to get those people to write for no money whatsoever, you know, to take this really, really, you know, dense text, you know, that deals with issues of sex, you know, the kind of stuff that they usually shy away from, like sexuality, sexuality, gender, your identity, politics, the stuff that, you know, that has nothing to do with guns, and it's nothing to do with how good you are in bed, but rather, you know, how comfortable you are with your body and the odd bits, you know, the very, very odd bits. I was thinking that, like, okay, that would be a tall order. It'd be possible. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just a really tall order. And also, I think the most important question for me was, what does this give back to the scene? I think, especially with everything I'm doing with spoken word, I'm always thinking about how it comes back to the scene, how, you know, it is going to inspire or encourage other people to take the kind of risk that we're going to take. So I thought, yeah, that would be great. But also, what's achievable by myself and Charlotte, because there's only the two of us. So then we talk about, like, why, how about if we try and get kids to rewrite how? Because we were approaching it, obviously we don't teach in schools, so we had no idea how schools work. So as far as we're concerned, not a lot of people, and it did show this when we spoke to the poets to read, not a lot of people knew how or interacted with how or appreciated it on the level that, say, myself and Charlotte did. But there are so many themes in that piece that can really resonate, especially coming after the riots that happened only 2 years ago. You know, that sort of feeling of displacement, that, you know, urban isolation, that, you know, loneliness amongst a lot of people. Jack had this brilliant line, Jack Rookie had this brilliant thing he said when he was doing his interview. He says, you have all your friends in your pockets. How can you feel alone? But you do. And it's just brilliant because we're talking about mobile phones, your friends on the phone. See, it's a wicked metaphor. So we went around and we asked a lot of, we asked 5 poets to do it. Some dropped out, we got some more. And what's been really great has been that the poets who felt very, very reluctant to try on the piece are the ones who came out with the most, I think, who made the most of a journey. See, people like Kareem, I don't think Kareem had read Howl. I think, he had read Howl before. But Kareem has always been excellent, and his piece is stellar. It was just absolutely stellar, you know. But you had guys like Jack, who never knew who Allen Ginsberg were, never heard about him. When they read the piece, they thought, oh my God, this is really... Because it's 26 minutes, and he's not talking about, you know, his time in the Bahamas. It's not easy reading at all. It's the words he uses. He uses Golgotha more times than should be used in any poem, unless it's a poem about Israel, like the very depths of Israel. And it's really dense. But Jack's piece is so personal and so touching and so funny, that kind of dark humor that he's really cultivating for himself, and it's just been brilliant. And then you had people like Rosie Knight, who really loved Howl, like she really loved Allen Ginsberg, and with the piece she's just absolutely overshot and kind of like surprised us all with what she came back with. It's astounding what she's written. It's a really, really good piece, and she's gone on to use it as kind of like in separate from the group. So it has been helpful in that sense. It's our first kind of like fully concept. We've tried some other concept shows, but this is kind of like the first one we've invented from scratch, and we've really kind of put our heart and soul into it. The Rounders were very, very kind to give us a space to try it out, and we've been very, very lucky that everywhere, the two places that we've performed it, here and Brainchild, the response has been amazing. I mean, we did that Brainchild Festival, just like a little trial run, and that's where two poets dropped out, so I had to write two poems on the spot, you know, because we've divided it into five sections, so, you know, two poets dropped out,
it became improv.
I had to write two poems on the day, and it was not, and then I had to read the original Howl as well. But I think that was where we got the most confidence to push on with it, because we were a bit worried. We wanted to do it just because we wanted to just trial run it and just make sure it works. Because you do this, you just don't tell anyone. Everybody does this. You just don't tell anyone it happens. Like, yeah, it's the premiere at the O2. Let's just do it at the pub. So we got up and we were really worried because Brainchild it's U Festival, so we thought that a lot of people wouldn't come. They wouldn't get it, but when we went there, the tent was packed. Like, the tent was heaving, and we were all surprised. We thought maybe, okay, something special had happened before, and people just chilled out because it's a festival. But apparently, what had happened before was the gig that happened before was quite an empty tent. Everyone just rushed in when they heard the howl was about to happen, and someone like, you know, James Messiah, who's written this gorgeous piece where he's. Because he, you know, he used to be a strong Christian, and then he became, as most strong Christians become, became a full-on atheist, like militant, ninja, like what? Who mentioned God? And he, you know, he's been very, very vocal about it in a lot of his pieces. He's made some growth as a hip hop artist, and as you know, with his own 90 A&E, where he talks about philosophy, and with his piece, he really goes into depth about what is sexuality, understanding sexuality. It's like the piece has really inspired him to even to chase on topics that have, he sort of hinted at. Whereas here, he's just been like full on. It's
talking about
it's like people took to it like ducks to water. They really, really loved it. So,
do you think that's the kind of association with beat poets, or is it Howl, or is it the people, or is it everything?
I think
it?
It's a combination. I think obviously Allen Ginsberg is a popular poet for good reason. That piece is amazing. It's the kind of piece that, because it's so long, every time you read it, you're going to get something new, and it just baffles me that someone could write something this dense in 26 minutes and read it, and that would be a signature poem. Like, everyone would go and they'd expect 26 minutes to be reserved to listen to Howl. And that's a really great. And the beat poetry scene was also cool. I feel the themes are things that, like, they just transfer through the ages, and I think they really, really connect with, I'm sure they connect with all ages, but I think they really connect with that sense that, you know, the young at heart. You know, young adults. That when you live in a city and you do feel like, you know, I think cities have, they fill you with so much promise, and at the same time, they dull your senses and they fill you with so much despair. They present you with so much despair. It's like you walk to somewhere like New York and you see these really huge buildings and you feel like everything is possible. You go to Parliament and you see all these majestic old architecture, and you're just like, oh my God, you know, I can be someone here. And then you miss your bus, and it rains, and your phone dies, and you have no money, and you're just like, and you have so many friends on Facebook, and you don't know anybody, and when you write tweets, no one answers back, because guess what? No one's listening to you. And I think that's something that a lot of people have connect with. I hope that when people hear the piece, they, you know, will be able to kind of connect with that sense of longing, and that hopefully that sense of hope, which a lot of the poets have pushed into their piece.
To shift the gears slightly, Lucy, I wondered if you could talk about the title of the festival a little bit, and you've mentioned how it sort of came about, but I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about the programming as well, and what you guys thought was important to have in there.
I'll start with the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we'd sort of decided to do this. And I think, so for us, the aims really were about, we knew that we wanted a festival that absolutely had a young energy and emerging artists at its core, but also showcasing some of the best spoken word that there is, and that we really wanted it to marry those two things and it just to be presented in one festival, and you wouldn't necessarily know what the difference was, but you've just got, kind of got the real energy of what spoken word can offer. And the other thing for what was really important to us was seeing where spoken word crosses over, which you mentioned in your introduction, and that was what we had a couple of focus groups, and we met some kind of tried and friends of ours who we really trusted, and sort of like sat down with them, talked to them about a kind of about what our ideas were and what they thought of them. And I think for what really came out of that was it was the performance that is really key in spoken word and what's possible. And that meant that, yeah, it's sort of stand-up spoken word poetry. It's also theatre. It can be music. It's in films. And so it was really important for us to kind of explore what all the potential was within those areas. And it's still a relatively kind of small scene. It's growing and growing. But actually what's nice about the size that it is at the moment is, you know, you meet somebody and they're like, oh, you've got to meet so-and-so. Oh, and Josh at Pojosi's got this great thing called How 2.0 and so-and-so. And have we thought about doing this? And it's really lovely. This lovely web is built. So it was quite collaboratively brought together as a programme. And sort of at the heart of it was two brand new commissions, both from companies that have kind of born out of projects that have been run at the Roundhouse. Mm. One is the show Toby's In, which is a Cloud of Foxes run. The other is a show called Tale from the Bedsit, which is by an amazing artist called Paul Cree. And he sort of brought something to us about a year ago in its very simplest idea. And we just thought it would be perfect as a sort of small-scale show. And so we kind of commissioned that. And that's happening in a hotel room opposite the Roundhouse. And is a monologue about a sort of time that he sort of lived in a bedsit in Brighton. And it's a really beautiful piece of storytelling. And then it was kind of about where we would fit in the newest and most emerging artists working with us right now, how we would work with and some of the most established. And so one event happening this Friday that I'm really excited about is Page Match, which is Bankshead the Guns Collective's night, and it's essentially poetry wrestling. So it's a kind of a wrestling rap battle, essentially. So each poet will come with their wrestling character, they'll have their sort of special name, they'll have the music that they come on to, and then they'll battle each other. And I think it's going to be hilariously funny for a start, but also it's quite nice because it's going to have all the tension of a battle, but actually we know that it's not real because it's wrestling, and wrestling's not real. So that's going to be loads of fun. And we've got workshops and panels and all sorts of things happening over the weekend. So it's a first for us. So we're kind of testing out lots of different things to see what's happening and what works and what doesn't work. Maybe it won't all work. But the response has been great. It's been selling really well. Yay! and in terms of the name, I'm afraid it is a really boring story. We didn't know what the heck to call this festival. We threw names out there. We were constantly replying all a little group of us. What about this one? What about this one? We sent it out asking people. And this is literally what happened. In a meeting, our marketing manager went, what about the last word? And it was the only time a name had come out where we all went, it's stuck. I like it. Do you like it? Do you like it? I like it. Do you like it? And it was like this, we've got the name. And it's that, I'm afraid, it just felt it summarised it in the way that we wanted to summarise it. And yeah, so it wasn't any more interesting or intelligent than that. It just suddenly was the right name that came out.
I think it's very intelligent because...
Oh, I'm not saying it's not, it's just it didn't come from
it's
that
the
place.
Process.
Oh, no, because it happened, I mean, it's happening in December. And it's the last, it's kind of last major spoken word event. So essentially, it is the last word, you know.
It is
the last word. Anything else is an epilogue, or you know.
Yeah, we thought it just worked when it was said out. We were just like, yes, yes, yes. Normally, there was always somebody going, oh, I don't know, and it was the only name that nobody said that. So we thought, we know it, we've nailed it, and that's. And then, of course, you've said it 100 times, and it's perfect.
I wondered on. You've all spoken about this a little bit, but spoken word is that weird kind of cultural manifestation that has all these influences, and it exists in music and it exists in theatre and poetry. And I wondered what your take on that is. What is spoken word now? And do you feel it's more than a cultural movement? Do you feel it's still sort of relatively subcultural? Do you think it's gaining a lot more interest and a lot more visibility? Or do you think it's always been present but in different ways?
So I have been doing spoken word for about 6 years now. And I think the way it goes, it's always every sort of year and a half, you get this moment where sort of everything feels like it's coming together. Either there'll be one act or there'll be a group of acts, and it'll feel like spoken word is about to go somewhere. BBC will do some kind of month-long program with world poetry, and a couple of artists will get some shine, and it's all, and then to go back down. And it happens every time religiously. It's like, and I feel like this time that has happened in 2013 has been the longest and the most sustained. Whether by 2014, well, we're all going to be banished back into the back into the darkness, or it's going to grow from strength to strength, remains to be seen. But I feel like it is growing. I feel like so much has happened this year that wouldn't have happened. Oh, for one, we have a spoken word festival. Hurrah! You know, we've had spoken word in the Royal Albert Hall. We have. I mean, there are at least 5 or 6 spoken word nights that routinely sell out. And, you know, spoken word happening in places like, I mean, Random Acts has had so much spoken word on it. And, you know, that these are things that are kind of like touching points that haven't happened before and are just happening more regularly. You have a lot of poets who are hitting 1 million, 2 million on YouTube, you know, whereas if you were going to hit that kind of number, you were either a talking cat or a really expensive video by a very popular artist. But then you have someone like Holly Minish, webcam, microphone, small room, YouTube, boom. It just goes, you know, it but spoken word comes from, you know, it's had, I think, a very varied history. It's like, you know, you can trace it right back to the first stories told by cavemen, possibly. You know, you can trace it to Flighton, who did the very, very first Scottish form of the first form of battle rapping, Shakespeare, you know, theatre as well. And it is an amalgamation. What's great, I think that's what's great about it, and what's great about UK spoken word, that it's so diverse. There is no one set way of doing it. There is no one set way of getting to the end goal. There is, if you had a night, you can never have any night where it's going to be the same kind of performance. You'll have, say, someone like Toby, who's more about the who's strictly about the narrative and telling the story, and then you'd have someone like Zia Ahmed, who's about as freestyle as you can get in spoken word without being terrible. And then you'd have someone like Harry Baker, who's incredibly, incredibly funny, but at the same time very philosophical and very, very smart. And then, of course, I do spoken word with music. I've got a band called Binner City, and then you have that, and then you have Polar Bear, who's in theatre, Kate Tempest, who does rap, Scroobius Pip, who does electro, and there's just so many different avenues, and it is that kind of melting pot. I think that's what attracts people to it.
I think that's what will make it. That's what will make it grow. I think it almost. It was a bit like, I remember when I was like 13, and like the Arctic Monkeys came out. Any band with guitars sounded like Arctic Monkeys, and those were what you were told guitar music was like.
Indie landfill.
Yeah, like, but and I think that's what I think is interesting about where spoken word's going now, and I hope our show proves is spoken word. It's not. Sometimes I feel like it gets given the label of like spoken word is only spoken word if you speak in a certain rhythm, and it is of a certain nature. When actually spoken word is anything spoken, and that's what I think is like what's really exciting about at the moment, is it's sort of breaking out of that mold of this is how spoken word should be. Spoken word is actually anything that's spoken, and it's the power of doing something with words and those worlds you create, or how
So it's not form specific.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a good quote.
And it's really flexible. Mm. And because it literally, in its basic form, just involves a person and their words. Mm. And like, and so it kind of can happen anywhere. So it's really grown in the kind of festival circuit. And as a producer in a venue in London, you know, there's all venues in London pretty much have spoken word. Mm. And I think the more and more venues are kind of really meaningfully engaging with kind of young people in creative projects, because more and more we're moving away from that kind of old school programming education, and it's, you know, it's much more combined now. And I think again, it's something that really connects to young people, and we have an annual poetry slam here, and you know, you get the 16-year-olds talking as eloquent. I could only have dreamt of being that eloquent and sort of speaking some really kind of powerful things that have happened to them, things that kind of mean something to them, something. And I just think it's a powerful thing to kind of connect with and listen to, and as Toby says, you know, and whether it's one voice or 11 voices coming together, or you know, a couple of voices and some musicians, it's sort of, it's just a really enjoyable thing to kind of watch. And I think that's simply one of the reasons it's getting more and more popular. And then, you know, the stratosphere that Kate Tempest has gone on this year is just extraordinary.
Yeah, people like Kate Tempest, Scroogius Pip, George the Poet. I think that's what's really cool about it, is like, because there is so much art in London, it's like you don't have to spit very far before you land on an artist in the UK. And you know, I remember when spoken word had, you know, really bad rep, you know, back when they were, you know, it was like poetry's very messy younger brother who always came to the parties with a very strange woman called Chantel, and who was, both of them were absolutely pissed, and he had to pay her off and send her off, and he, you do this, you know. And it was, you know, with all the gigs that, when Paul Jazz was running, the only places we could ever get kind of like spaces were always pubs and stuff. And now you have spoken word happening in theatres, because you've had these people, George the Poet and Scroobius Pip and Kate Tempest, performing in places like Juice Holland and the Royal Albert Hall. You know, I think a lot of people are warming to the idea quite positively that a man standing in a room who is not making you laugh and is not an actor is not a bad way to spend a Friday or Saturday night. That, and the Round Our Slam has really, really helped in that as well, because a lot of young people who are performing, you know, having been coached by Polar Bear and soon to be Bowden. And also, you know, when they bring their friends to watch and they see this great big mass of talent and they go on YouTube and, you know, you're hearing someone and he's not rapping. He's not that really scary form where you have to learn how to follow a beat or whatever. He's actually just talking. And he's not talking about really clever things that make you feel like your brain is farting, like really hard in your brain, in your head. He's talking about usually something simple as going to the pub or, you know, the morning after the night before. And he's just saying it in a way that it totally makes sense and is deceptively easy or simple. And a lot of people, like myself, long when I was watching Def Jam Poetry, just for you. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, sure. So I think
it's very human. Is that
it's very human. This is, I mean, it's about as human as you can get. It's art that really doesn't need 200 years of practice before you get into it. You literally, you know, so long as you feel honest and you're willing to put the work in to learn some of the conventions, and once you've learned those conventions, they're completely yours to bend or break as you see fit. Like you said, you don't have to rhyme all the time to get your words to shine.
Do you think it's very connected to the urban, or do you think it's just most visible in the kind of urban environment?
What inspired lots of people to be interested in lyrics to me came out of hip hop. Because if you look at what what's come out recently, music-wise, and what, I guess, thinking of how the people are now who are coming out with spoken word, they kind of, most of us grew up in the same age where if you liked lyrics and you were interested in words and what was being written over music, there, t- to me, I find things like Neil Young and Bob Dylan mm-hmm. are very similar to A Tribe Called Quest in terms mm-hmm. of what they're writing, mm-hmm. and it's that. I think it just happens that it's come from there because that was what was doing something interesting lyrically. So yeah, and like the rhythm.
I'm reluctant to say it's an urban thing. I think you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Hip hop has played a very large part. You can't really discount that. You know, if it wasn't for rap, you know, a lot of people wouldn't be able to find some kind of connection with spoken word. But at the same time, folk has played its part. Mm-hmm. Comedy has played its part. Theatre has played a very, very large part. I mean, sometimes I can't tell the difference between monologues and a spoken word piece, mm-hmm. especially when you use the word I repeatedly. I think they've all played its part, and you can't argue that the most popular form of poetry does have a lot of rhyme and does have that scan, but at the same time, you find a lot of amazing spoken word artists who don't rhyme at all and are just really involved in wordplay and metaphors and similes, or just kind of like having a more rhythmic as opposed to end rhyme, couplet. Someone like Warsan Shire, you know, barely uses any rhyme at all, but, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to go to a gig, if you can find one of hers, and not feel absolutely captivated with every single minute she's on stage. Mm. You have someone like Rob Alton, who, again, doesn't use rhyme, but is so funny. In such a deadpan, very, very kind of like, I'm not even trying and I'm slightly embarrassed to be here kind of way. And then you have Toby, who rhymes. Myself, and I rhyme a lot, so it's... I think this is what differentiates spoken word from the UK from spoken word anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It is that diversity. You know, say, you know, you go to America, you could say yes, they've got the beat poetry and that whole tradition, but hip hop is so intertwined with spoken word, they're totally unbreakable. Whereas here, it's like put a lineup. Just watch last year's Roundhouse poem. You'll have two poets that rhyme, and then one will come up and he'll just be scattered. Just blank verse all over the place. And then one will come up and he'll be couplet, 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 couplet. And then you have someone like, I remember the one I judged, there was Alex Guida, there was Jodie Ann Bickley, there was Bridget Minimo. All different poets. You know, Bridget Minimo had to start, stop, and she doesn't even use that much rhyme. And you had someone like Alex Guida, who's just lyrically just so on point. And Jodie Ann Bickley was very, very simple yet warming, very down to earth, very straightforward, basic rhyme schemes. And yeah, they all held everyone's attention. Yes, we're a cloud. We're like a cloud, like a cloud of foxes, you might say. That's what we're seeing in the UK.
On that note, and to kind of round it up, I wonder what your vision is for spoken word. For the next kind of foreseeable, where would you like to see it, and how would you like to see it?
From a Roundhouse perspective, we would like the last word to be an annual event, and I think the success of this festival, which as I say has only just begun, but yet, you know, in terms of kind of the support from the community and sales of tickets and all of that kind of stuff, you know, it feels like there's a real buzz and it's really exciting. And so it's kind of looking at how this has been and then kind of coming up with a concept for the next one. And the dream is that, I mean, I think it will probably be on a smaller scale for a few years, but the dream is that, you know, it starts to share the incredible space that we have upstairs, because this is all in our smaller spaces, you know, alongside the Arctic Monkeys and the... contemporary circus companies from Australia. But, you know, I mean, I think we'll be doing what we've been doing for the past four or five years, which is hopefully moving at the same pace as the industry and the scene, and kind of working with all the incredible artists that are kind of out there, and kind of developing collaborations and partnerships with the artists, but also the other kind of venues that do this sort of work. And yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll be watching it grow and grow and grow. And that's from a sort of venue producing perspective.
Yeah.
No, you go.
I feel that we are in the future of spoken word right now. Mm. I remember like 5 years ago, where we were talking, I was talking with a bunch of poets about what kind of future you wanted to see spoken word. And I said, I wanted to see a future where everyone who came to spoken word and wanted to use it as a platform to get somewhere else could. And that's exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. If you want to be a promoter, you know, it's you can't be a poetry promoter. If you wanted to use spoken word to create a musical band or whatever, or a theatre piece, or going to education, or whatever you want to do. It's like, how many poets at the moment are touring, like actually touring, going around and performing to places that we never dreamed we would to go, just based off money we're getting for our art, and perform and come back. I only just found out Harry Baker is in Johannesburg. It's like, wow, you know, and that, I mean, we've got a festival. I mean, the only thing that can happen now is, like Lucy said, more of that. You know, I would like to see the Last Word Festival grow. I would like to see, yes, spoken word music acts performing in the big stage. I would like to see more poets coming into the scene, and I'd like to see more people, not just successful in the I'm a spoken word artist, but like Kate Tempest, diversifying into other scenes, you know, because that is going to inspire so many people into thinking, actually, you know what, I talk too much, she talks a lot, let's make this happen, you know, let's go forward, just like it did for me.
I think just echo those thoughts and to say it, I'd hope to see it to grow. And I guess with kind of the show we're doing, A Cloud of Foxes, I hope it kind of shows other places you can take spoken word and how it can be so many different things. And it would be lovely, I think the storytelling is lost a lot of the time, I feel like, within our world. And I hope that, to me, I think it's one of the most important things there is, and I hope that it will just carry on growing, really.
I went to Portugal last year, and they were doing the Portuguese Poetry Slam. Oh my God, Portugal! Yeah, I went to Portugal, and they were doing the Portuguese Poetry Slam, and I remember I got there like 7 o'clock, and I was waiting, and, you know, it was in this nightclub, and, you know, they were drinking and whatever, and it reached about 9 o'clock, and the promoter of the night comes to me and he goes, "Hi Josh, how are you doing? I hope you're okay. You're going to be on at 2 o'clock." And I was like, "Tomorrow?" He was like, "No, tonight, like 2 past." And I was pissed. I was really pissed. Like, I was like, that's dead. Are they going to put me on in between, like, I just imagine they'd put me on between, like, maybe a DJ or whatever, like, everyone drunk. I'd be like, there's some poetry. And then so I was like, whatever, they're paying me, so fine. I went to my hotel, came back out, got there. They were having a full-blown slam. It was like, literally, there were about 100 or so people in there, all dead quiet, watching poets at 2 o'clock, 2 past midnight. I was like, oh my God, that people are actually out. Obviously, Portugal is a completely different place and they have completely traditions, but I really would like that to happen. I've been to New Yorkan poetry in Ukraine, New Yorkan poets in New York, and they have poetry up to midnight, and it was sold out, like in, one out. Mm. I want more. I would like to see that. I would actually like to see that in London. I'd like to see nights that are just rammed. In that kind of rowdy kind of, I'm talking standing room only. People are in there and they're all dead quiet. And when someone makes a noise or phone goes off, everyone just goes, just cusses man out. Like, really, that's what I want to say. I would like to see, like, that kind of feverish excitement that you can find in, say, grime and whatever happening in spoken word. Not because, you know, it's exciting to people, just because there's so many people who are doing it. And there's so many really, when you have so many people doing it, what you have is a lot of really exciting acts, a lot of really exciting people. And when you have nights like that and you have the kind of audience that appreciates them, that would be, it would be amazing to walk into that and just see, even if it's not my night, just walk in and be like.
Should we say for now, come to the last word, stay late. And make spoken word happen. Thanks very much to all of you.
Yeah, thank you. Cheers.